I'll do mine a little short. I won't go on that long. You know, some of you guys are hungry. But basically what I'm going to talk about is my experience as a DEA agent, how the mechanism works from the inside, looking out instead of the outside looking in. And basically, I'll go into a little history first of who I am and how I came to be. And then I'll speak to you about my allegations and what I found on the involvement of the Central Intelligence Agency involving drug trafficking. First of all, you know, several years ago, you know, I took an oath to protect the Constitution of the United States and its citizens. And I'm trying to do it to its fullest now. Even ironically, I'm still fighting for those rights, but this time it's against the criminals in my own government. And I'm basically the only person in this country right now that goes on a lecture tour and talks and about the CIA involving drug trafficking, but I also show a lot of pictures. I'm sorry to say I didn't bring them with me on this trip, but I got over 2,000 slides that I usually show of everything that happened. I mean, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And what I'm gonna talk to you about today, hopefully when you leave here today, you'll get a better idea of how the government thinks when it does and gets involved in these atrocities. Okay, first of all, my experiences started going back to Vietnam when I was an infantry combative soldier. I saw a lot of my fellow soldiers lay low of overdose of heroin. And it came to a point that we were on patrol and we would find one of my friends kneeling against or sitting against a tree with a needle stuck to his arm. We would have to get an AK-47 and shoot him in the chest so he could be going home as a hero. Because things like that happened. You know, I have to go back into the Vietnam era to tell you how the Central Intelligence had been involved in smuggling heroin in body bags coming back to the U.S. In Vietnam, the average soldier was 18 years old, never left home before. And he was devastated, especially when a soldier wanted to get married before he went up there and so forth, and would get Dear John letters. There's nobody to fall back on except heroin lady. And they started using drugs, and they just started smoking what they call opium joints. It's marijuana joints dipped in opium, and got hooked. We lost 58,000 soldiers in Vietnam. Right after they came back, twice that many died for different reasons. Some died because they just couldn't make it back into the world. Most of them, if not the majority of them, were suffering from what is known as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And a lot of them went into what was known as criminal justice. They went into law enforcement. They felt guilty that they were on borrowed time. They felt that they should have never come back. And what they did when they joined law enforcement, they were looking for the bullet with their name on it. And that's reality, that's really what happened. The other sad thing that came out of Vietnam was that one third that came back from Vietnam were heroin addicts. And that's a high number. And we go back to the history of the drug trade, how it all happened, how the CIA was involved in bringing heroin into the U.S., having troops that came back to be the distribution individuals in the U.S. for the Central Intelligence Agency. Now we go back to Vietnam and how this whole thing worked in Central America and Mexico and South America. The reason that the Central Intelligence Agency was able to get away with drug trafficking and continues to get away in drug trafficking is because of one reason. They have built what is known as an apparatus outside the CIA. We had John Secor, Oliver North, Felix Rodriguez, that were in Vietnam, General Sinclair, all those individuals, it's the same cell that ran drugs, was involved in the Contra operation in El Salvador. Those same people were instrumental in shipping large quantities of cocaine into the U.S. Never in the history did we ever have more cocaine in the U.S. than then. And they got involved with that little apparatus. And the reason they built that little apparatus outside the Central Intelligence Agency is so there would be no paperwork to be followed, no paper trail. They didn't have to answer to Congress, they didn't have to answer to anybody. And if you have that, that is how they conduct their business. A lot of them went before committees to testify the fact that they didn't know anybody, and what they did, they ended up blaming their CIA assets, their informants. And because of that, they were able to get away with it and continue to get away with it. This same apparatus was sent down to Mexico when Clinton sent those helicopters in. It was about 80 helicopters that they sent in for the so-called war on drugs, when in reality, it was being used to fight the subversives down in Chiapas with the Zapatistas. That's a fact. It's very well documented. Same people were involved in smuggling large quantities of weapons to Africa during that same time period. At the same time that all these individuals, were mercenaries that we had, who were running all over South America and Central America, were being arrested by those governments for smuggling weapons and drugs and so forth, and they all got out free because why? They used credentials belonging to the Central Intelligence Agency. It was a covert operation. And I brought with me some magazines going back to 1980, Soldier of Fortune magazines, where they talk about those covert operations. They bragged about how they were smuggling large quantities of guns to South America on their way to Africa. And how these mercenaries, Americans, that were arrested down in Brazil, in Argentina, we're also working for covert operations in El Salvador, all on behalf of the U.S. government. And what happened there was, this is the same blueprint, guys. This is exactly the same thing that they're using in Colombia right now. The same people. And the reason I know this is because I used to work with U.S. colonels at Ilopango Airport, where all the trafficking was going on. And I got a call the other day from one of the colonels that I used to work with. His name is Lieutenant Colonel Adame, Albert Adame. Was in El Salvador from 1985 to about 1989, several years. And he was involved in all that stuff. Now, this is the trick. They use like vendors for night vision equipment and all kinds of sniper weapons that they were going to use to train the El Salvadorians. Well, in reality, I have a book right up here in 1986 where the Central Intelligence Agency went before Congress and our military went before Congress saying that none of our soldiers were involved in operations. Here in 1990, those soldiers, American soldiers that went in El Salvador, are asking for medals now. They're asking for CIBs, combat infantry badges, they're asking for all kinds of medals during that war time period, and guess what? They sent in their pictures being out in the jungles on patrol with the Salvadorians when it was against the law to do that. And I got the magazine right up here. You guys feel free to see it after the lecture. And it's amazing how these people now are asking for combat pay and danger pay and all that stuff. And it was signed off by General Powell. at the time that he was chief of staff for the military, goes to show that the way that they work is the fact that they go ahead and violate all these laws and get away with it, even though it's against the law and known for the fact that in several years it will be exposed. But it won't make a difference to them. Why? Because this is the way the U.S. government works. When I was an agent down in South America and Central America, I couldn't understand why one arm of the government was fighting so-called war on drugs while the other arm was actually sleeping with the cartels. I remember going on patrol in Peru with the anti-narco-terrorist units down there, and I would see the military playing soccer ball with the Colombians in Peru. And I was trying to justify, I said, maybe there's something I'm not getting here. And then it finally dawned on me that what happened was we had like all the banks from Lima flying to the Huayaga Valley to pick up dollars, narco dollars, U.S. dollars, for their banks in Lima. You know, I came face to face with the contradiction of my assignment. As a federal agent, I was down there putting my life on the line, and all of other agents were out there doing the same thing while the other arm was sleeping with the cartels. I lost two dear friends of mine, Frankie Fernandez, who was killed in Peru on an operation. I lost another friend, Kiki Camarena, in Mexico in 1985. And, you know, it's very well documented. When Kiki got grabbed, he got tortured. And just like you guys, they recorded his torture. And he wasn't by the cartels, guys. Everybody blames Felix Gallardo and all those other people. But the people that tortured Kike and recorded his interview were all CIA assets. That's very well documented in DA files. I remember listening to the cassette tape on Kike when he was pleading for his life. He was saying, please don't kill me, I have a family. And then you can hear the chicharra, it's known as the chicharra, the electric palm. And this is a drug agent, a U.S. drug agent that was being tortured by CIA assets because they wanted to know how far in the government they were documenting the Mexican government involving drug trafficking. So in 1992, after there was a contract put out on me by a Guatemalan colonel by the name of Hugo Moran, who said to me that he was getting ready to go to war college in the U.S. sponsored by the Central Intelligence Agency. And I canceled his visa because of being involved in drug trafficking. And he was very upset that he put a contract out on me that videotaped him making the threat he was going to shoot me and kill me in El Salvador so they could blame it on the guerrillas and get away with it. Now, the normal thing to do is to take you out of that country right away. Well, they kept me there for 11 more days. And then what they wanted me to do was go undercover on the Salvadoran military because all the weapons that they were seizing from the military, from the guerrillas in El Salvador, were being sold to the Colombian cartels. And I did go undercover, and I ended up buying a sniper rifle that was Russian-made. It's called a Dragunov. And that's when they were shooting helicopters down there in Salvador with those rifles. And it was the Salvadoran military who was seizing this weapon, going into a warehouse, and the back door was a line of Colombian traffickers buying all these weapons. And that's what's going to happen in Colombia. The same blueprint, guys, is the same thing they've been doing over and over and over again. This thing about going after the drug traffickers in Colombia, it's not true. They're not. See, when I was in Salvador, this is what happened. Mike talked about it earlier about having a war. If you don't have a war, you ain't gonna have good soldiers. You have a war, you have good soldiers. And what happened when I was in Salvador, which was illegal, they brought in a company of U.S. Rangers, Army Rangers, to go on operations. Well, guess what? They got ambushed by the guerrillas, and they whacked everybody. So the United States government, they send in a C-130, and they put them all in there, all the dead bodies. They took them to Fort Benning, Georgia, and put them in a Chinook, and made it look like they had a helicopter accident. Now that is also very well documented. So I decided that I was no longer going to be part of this. In 1992, after doing extensive undercover work with the DEA, which was had always been my dream, you know, being a drug agent. And when I left Vietnam, I said, if I make it out of that war, I'm going to start my own personal war on drugs by becoming a federal agent. And I did. Came back in April. In June, I started summer school, got my degree in criminal justice as a police officer for 6 years. Working a night shift, 11 to 7, and going to school from 8 in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I come from a family, a very patriotic family. I am the only son in my family. And my father said to me, says, you got to pay your dues to your country. And my mom said, well, he's the only son. If he gets killed, who's going to carry the family's name? Says, you're paying your dues. So I went to Vietnam, and I was just lucky enough to get up, leave, come back, and do what my dream was, to become a federal agent. And I did. But I could no longer take it. This atrocity that was going on. The patchwork. There was, you know, one of the things that boggled my mind was the fact, how could the U.S. government, for example, in El Salvador, we had the guy who shot and killed Archbishop Romero. He was a firearms instructor for the anti-terrorist unit in Salvador. Why? Because he was given to us by the U.S. Embassy in Salvador for us to use. We trained the dead squads in Salvador. I have pictures of CIA agents that trained the dead squads in Central America. And it's the same people that are training the dead squads in, oh, which is now known as the paramilitary in Colombia. Okay? So it's the same apparatus. And when that happens, I said, you know what, I want no part of it anymore. So I left the agency. I took an early retirement in 1992, and I left. And there's an old saying, you know, I was telling some ladies a while ago this morning, says, you know, people don't know what they're going to do in life until they turn 40. And now I'm an educator. I teach kids, high school kids. I teach them about criminal justice. I teach him about the other side of law enforcement. I teach him about the post-traumatic stress disorder, the high divorce rate, the high suicide rate that nobody wants to talk to him about. I talk about the tarnish bash, which is what the corruption within law enforcement, and the heavy bash, which is the stress. This is something I teach them. Not to get them from not being in law enforcement, because we need good guys in law enforcement. But they have to know the other side. If I would have known all this, I don't think I would have ever gone into law enforcement. But this is important. So finally, in 1995, I was very devastated. So I made a pilgrimage to the Vietnam Wall. And this was filmed by ABC, and I went down there, and I renounced my Bronze Star that was given to me in Vietnam. I gave it back to my country because of the atrocities that was going on in Central America. Along with that was my last combat boots I had with me, with my Bronze Star pinned to it, and a letter to the president, asking him to stop these atrocities in Central America. And of course, it got worse. We're now in Colombia, where we're going to be experiencing the same things. We're going to be having the same casualties that we had in Salvador. Why? To fight a bogus war. We never had a war, and we'll never have a war on drugs because of the money issues. We've got more banks in South Texas than we do Circle K's or 7-Elevens. The money's too big. And it's a shame that I look out here and I see a few people, but if I can be able to educate you people, and you go back and you tell your families, you people are here because one out of four in the family is involved in drug trafficking, whether they're using or they sell. And it's going to destroy family values. It's going to destroy everybody. Not only the person who goes to jail, but whoever is around that person, the mother, the father, the family. It's all going to be destroyed because of the money situation in corporate America. And I will end this with an old quotation that was said by a good person. And that is the following: the ultimate measurement of a man is not where he stands in times of comfort and convenience, but where he stands in times of controversial and challenge. So we have to get involved. That was by Martin Luther King. We have to get involved. We have to go out there and educate our people. Colombia is the Spanish word for Vietnam. And a lot of our kids are going to be going to war for nothing. I promise you. Kind of reminds me of Hamburger Hill in Vietnam. For about a week, we fought to get that hill, and we lost hundreds of soldiers. And we took the hill just to give it back to them a week later. Think about that. That's exactly what's going to happen in Colombia. We're going to put on a show up there, and then it's going to go back to the same thing because of money. Thank you.